Your station for the best Ravens coverage.
Bringing the team to the fans.
It's news from the nest.
We're grateful for our media. We really are, most of the time.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
News from the Nest here on this Wilbur Crush Wednesday. Vinny and Haney, Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw. Other side of the glass, pass rush guru. Chuck Smith met with the media talking about a couple of his players and his schemes and all the fun stuff that goes along with that. One of the players he talked about, it's a guy we heard earlier or later in the hour of 11 o'clock, Adape Owe. He wants more packages. And Chuck Smith says, okay, we got this.
Yeah, Dobbs looks fantastic. He still maintains his speed. And, you know, we want to be multifunctional. You know, we want to be able to put people all around the field, and Dot fits that, you know, that description, as well as KV. You know, all our inside guys can play outside. So we want to be versatile, and I think Coach Orr, that's one of the things that, you know, makes this defense, you know, that's going to be tough to go against, you know, because we can do things like that. But Dot definitely, he can play at any position across the board when it comes to pass rush.
Yeah, and, you know, they'll line him up over the center. They'll put him over the guard. And when I say line him up over the center, he'll be standing up over the center. And then they'll stunt him and twist him from there. You know, line up over the guard, that more than likely is a mismatch just because of speed and explosives. Biggest thing that, you know, if he's lining up over the guard, you want to be on the edge because you don't want to let... Because if that guy gets his hands on you, he's going to be bigger, stronger, you know, and then it's a stalemate. But... a lot of times when he's down inside, it's a stunt or a twist. They're creating things. They're blitzing people from the outside. They're doing different things.
With the added girth, does he look like he's a little slower, or is he still explosive and all that good stuff?
Yeah, no, he looks the same. I mean, really can't tell. I mean, he put on good weight because it's all muscle and stuff. So does he look any different speed-wise? No, he still looks fast.
Now, Mike Green's a guy that we're all excited about. Ravens are excited about. Got him in the second round. Chuck Smith, what do you like about the rookie?
Mike is earning his stripes. You know, Mike's a rookie. So Mike has to play his position, get in line, you know, like any other rookie. But Mike is going out there. He's competing at a high level. You know, Mike can rush. You know, Mike is strong, you know, at the point of attack on the run. And what I like most about Mike, he just gives great effort. You know, when you think of some of the great players around the league, what defines them as great effort. And that may help you make a lot of plays within itself. You know, he has a great grasp of the defense. Matt Robinson's done a fantastic job teaching him in coverage and things like that. And, he, you know, when we talk about pass rush, you know, Mike is all in.
He is definitely all in. I mean, he was the leading sack guy in the country last year with 17 and a half. So, no, I mean, that he is all in on the sack stuff. But, you know, when you hear him talk, you know, he wants to talk about how he can stop the run, too, and everything. But I would probably guess that he'll be in the nickel and dime stuff, rushing the passer early in the season, at least until he shows that he can set the edge. Because if he's out there, you know, on first down, people are going to run right at him and see if he can set the edge. And we're going to find out in the preseason games, because he's going to have that opportunity, you know, a lot during those three games.
And he'll earn his stripes, as Chuck Smith said, but I'm very excited to see him in the preseason, and hopefully this will translate into a surprising rookie year for a guy that I said 8 sacks.
Yeah, I think I said the same, or I said 6+. We said either 6+ or 8, one of the two. But, yeah, I'm in total agreement, just because – He can naturally bend in his hands and all those things. You know, like I said earlier, when he's in the one-on-one drills, he can win those kind of things. The thing that he needs to learn is, you know, when they're in a group and they're stunting and twisting, he needs to have a good feel for how they're doing those things. But what I hope in the preseason, Bob, is they line him up out there wide and it's 3rd and 10 and just say, go get him. That's what I want to see. I think that's what we all want to see, that he can win those matchups.
Now, here's Chuck Smith talking about an interesting stat or scenario. I mean, you get your sack numbers like the Ravens did last year, 2nd in the NFL in sacks, but pressure rate
was bad.
Not all that great. So, yep. Chuck Smith, how do we get that balance working?
You know, I like the fact that we are able to get quarterbacks down. You know, and there are a lot of different things that, you know, go into pressure rate. You know, we got guys that can rush, and we got, you know, coordinator that's, you know, coming into his own. But I really look at, you know, the pass rush numbers and look at what we do. Just as we continue to get opportunities and continue to develop, you know, we'll be able to get sacks. But, you know, I don't know exactly how to answer the pressure rate part. But I know it has a lot to do with the technique. And if you go do your research, you'll see that with the running quarterbacks, if you just rush upfield against Lamar, so that's kind of it. Most teams bull rush him too. So when you play Lamar Jackson, the pressure rate's going to be down too because everybody's bull rushing and keeping them in front of him.
I was just, you know, because when I heard Chuck say that, I'm saying to myself, okay, who are the running quarterbacks? Because, you know, because then I go back to, you know, that's how Ajabo rushes all the time. You know, like it's right. A run, like he's playing against Lamar. You know, when it's Joe Burrow and everybody else. I mean, I don't know that they play enough running quarterbacks last year where your win rate is not that good. So I don't know, but I just, they need a guy, you know, like Micah Parsons, you know, I mean, his win rate, I'm guessing, is pretty damn good. You know, they need Watts' win rate is good. Hendrickson's win rate is good. Garrett's win rate. They need a guy that's win rate is scary, that you're requiring a double team on him.
Looking at the Ravens' schedule to that point, running quarterback. And nobody runs like Lamar. I mean, right. I mean, maybe Daniels and a couple of others. But Josh Allen, he can run.
Yeah, yep.
Joe Flacco, not so much. Jared Goff, nah.
No.
Mahomes is nifty.
Yeah, he's not a runner.
But he's nifty enough in the pocket. Yep. Stens plays. CJ Stroud.
Nifty.
Stafford. No. With a bad back and everything. No win rates.
Yeah.
No excuses. It's news from the Nest Video at 80-105-7 The Fan here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Here's Chuck Smith talking about a rookie and what he is like from him. Or maybe doesn't like, and he has people.
Fub, he's got incredible upside. He is lightning quick. You know, he's 293 pounds or something, but then they say he's small because he's short, but he's 293. But he's got a high skill level. He's quick. He has a great grasp of pass rush moves. He loves the pass rush. He has an aggressive mindset and a learning mindset. I love Aeneas. And, you know, he as he continues to learn, going against big guys and going against protection, he'll get better. But he's been doing a good job for us, and I look forward to seeing him continue to grow.
The thing is he is short. He's 5'11", you know, and he does have quick hands, and he is passionate. He is not a guy that you're going to put in there and anchor against the run. We're not going to see him on first down because he'll get blown up. But what he can do is if he's on the edge – and what's the edge? What's the edge of a center? It's on his shoulder. You know, the edge of a guard on his shoulder, like a three technique is the outside shoulder. You know, get on the shoulder where you can take advantage of your speed and quickness. Because if you're going to go down the cylinder, right down the middle, then you're taking away what you do best. What was Chuck just talking about? The speed and quickness. How do I utilize his speed and quickness? If I'm Peoples, how do I utilize what he can do best, stunting, twisting, take advantage of. How do I take advantage of his quickness in the pass rush?
And finally, Mike Green. We've been talking a lot about him positively and rightfully so, at least so far in camp. Here's Mike Green talking about ramping it up this week now that the pads are on.
I think it's been well so far. You know, there's always going to be room for improvement. But I think the last few days it's been fun. It's been exciting, of course. And, I mean, we're all blessed to be out here and be able to practice another day. So, yeah, it's been great so far.
I think Mike Green has flashed enough in those two padded practices where he shows you the things that get you excited about him being their most natural rusher since Suggs. And, you know, that's what I can't wait for August 5th when they go against the Colts. And then when he plays the preseason game. I mean, because one-on-one kind of shows you what he's capable of, you know, but then when it's, you know, like when Tim Williams was here from Alabama and I was in love with his one-on-one stuff, then when he got in the game, it was like, where the hell, what happened?
Right.
You know, so And I don't think that's going to happen with Green, but I'm anxious to see in a game the things that he can do.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. It's buy or sell. Count the midweek money. Talk about the sports subjects of this day. Got the Orioles and Toronto lineup as they're about to finish this series. Orioles go for the sweep coming up at 12:35. Jim Hunter is going to be joining us. Funhouse, Dolan McGraw, NFL Lunch at 1. Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com. Looks like on ESPN, a lot of Steeler ass kissing going on. Is that appropriate? Not around here, it ain't.
Are you buying
straight cash, homie,
or selling?
I'm not gonna buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Well, the Crush Wednesday. Orioles take it on the Blue Jays coming up in a matter of minutes. Series finale. Birds going for the sweep. Trade deadline tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Get into all of that with Jim Hunter coming up in a couple of minutes. Ravens back at it. 1:15, about an hour from now. Plenty of going on, but let's count some cash first. Let's buy or sell.
All right, Bob. It says investors remain largely on standby ahead of the Fed's interest rate decision, which I think is today. And with that, the Dow is up 33. The S&P's up 14. NASDAQ's up 92. DraftKings up $1.02. And Under Armour down 7 cents, 646.
Starting the NFL today, Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers. Well, he hit the ground running in his first NFL season, had over 1,200 yards and 7 touchdowns, and really became the lone bright spot in that offense. When it was all said and done, actually came very close to beating out Ja'Marr Chase for the most targets in the league. Chase finished with 175, Nabers 170, but it should be noted that Nabers missed 2 games while Chase played a full season. Fast forward to this year, Nabers dealing with some nagging camp injuries, but in that New York offense, he still is the lone star. Buy or sell, Vinny, Nabers will in fact lead the NFL in targets this year.
With Russell Wilson and maybe Jackson Dart, I'll buy it, but he's got a nagging toe injury during camp. And, you know, if he's got turf toe... That stuff is, you know, he said it's like a mosquito, you know. That can be a pain in the ass all year long.
Go over to baseball here. Lots to celebrate with Jackson Holliday's breakout season. But if there was one area to point to as a negative, it would probably be the strikeouts. Picked up his 101st K of the season yesterday in his 100th game played. It's one of the worst K rates on the team. 23% next to Colton Cowser, but actually a drop from his smaller sample size of games played last year. On the other side of that, he's taking less walks this year than he did last year, but still not many to begin with. Buy or sell, Bob, Holliday will be able to finish the year with less Ks than games played.
I'm going to sell it. And hey, the Ks, we get it, but you're the leadoff hitter. And according to Tony Mantolino, you're going to be the leadoff hitter for the next 5 years. So you're going to have to tighten up, get that on-base percentage a little tighter, maybe take a couple of walks, because we know the kid's got power. He might be a 2020 guy when it's all said and done this season. Base running blunders are becoming somewhat of an issue. But you mentioned Cowser. There's a guy whose K rate's starting to conserve me. It's like, if he's not hitting a home run, he ain't hit. So move, man. Get it together, bro. I'll call you bro since we're all friends here.
Back to the NFL, draft weekend drama involving Shador Sanders. That's in the rear view as he now battles for positioning in Cleveland's crowded quarterback room. But there was a lot of discussion about him landing there in the first place, mainly because they already drafted Dylan Gabriel earlier in the draft. The live war room reactions from Andrew Berry and company seemed to suggest that they weren't very excited about the pick. And people started to assume that the decision to do so was a call that came from ownership. Well, Jimmy Haslam, he's disputing that, says it was 100% Barry's decision to take Sanders and to trade up to do so. Vinny, are you buying or selling? Haslam had little to no involvement with that decision.
I'll sell it because he probably did it. And even if he did it, he's not going to acknowledge. I mean, if he says, yeah, I did it, you know, he's throwing everybody under the bus. So Andrew Berry, hey, I sign his check, so you're taking all the hits.
It's crazy because watching on NFL Network, it was Dee Haslam and Jimmy Haslam meeting with the media. It would be like me and Vinny bringing our wives here to watch us do sports talk. Or on the flip side, I'm going to work with a cancer patient where my wife works. Like, hey, what do you got? You should do that. You should do... Like, why don't you get the bleep out of here? That sort of thing.
Isn't it the family owning? He's like the front man, but it's the family, like the Rooney family owns the Steelers.
I get that, but I don't remember Art Rooney or any Rooney.
That's fair.
Dan Rooney bringing their wife. Not saying that women don't know anything about football, but... You know, let her be the voice then. One of them do the yapping.
Maybe she made the call.
Not going John and Yoko here.
She wanted Sanders.
No, because then they asked Haslam about Arch Manning. You know, are you guys going to go for a first pick for Arch Manning? Because he's from Tennessee. He's friends with the Mannings, all that.
Let's see. More Orioles notes here. Corbin Martin last night, the unlikely hero, picking up his first career save when the Orioles were really in a pinch with their bullpen management. The reliever decisions only going to get tougher for Tony Mancelino as the season progresses. A lot of reliable starters, if they leave, going to tax the pen even more. Pretty much turn it into an open tryout here for a few months. As far as the closer role, though, likely be by committee. Guys like Keegan Aiken, Andrew Kittredge, assuming he's staying, they would probably have priority, but even still, others will be in the mix. So with that in mind, Bob, buy or sell, Corbin Martin will finish the season with at least five saves.
Five saves? Ah, man. He got his first last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting the Orioles to play better, as they have been down the stretch. Five. All right, I don't want to jinx them. I'll go, yeah, I'll buy it. Even though I don't really buy it.
You're jinxing no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll buy it. What the hell? Whatever. David Lee Roth, who they just called up yesterday, making five saves, where it's all said.
Houston Roth, right?
Oh, excuse
that
me.
That was, yeah. Easy confusion.
As long as it's not Hagar, I'm cool with it.
That's his son.
Oh, yeah.
Well, before we break here, day three of giveaways here on Vinny and Haney. Two more tickets to the Hall of Fame basketball series that's coming back to CFG Bank Arena on November 3rd. You can see the Maryland Terrapins take on Coppin State. Also, watch Towson take on Loyola. So plenty of local basketball action happening, and you can be there if you're our lucky winner right now. If you are caller number 5 at 410-583-1057, you will get today's pair of tickets to the Hall of Fame basketball series.
And hopefully that becomes a yearly thing where they play in Baltimore the four. I mean, look, UMBC, work them into the equation, Navy. As we've said, there's six teams in a 30-mile radius that are eligible, or 40-mile radius, eligible for the NCAA tournament. Get them all in there. Maryland, of course, has to be the anchor school. Everybody take their swings at the Terps, but make this an annual thing down at CFG Bank Arena. Vinny, you're out to one winning drive. No pads today, I'm assuming. Nope. What do you think's going on out there? What are you watching first?
Well, I want to see if Armour Davis is practicing, you know, see if he's back today. Otherwise, kind of see what the energy is like today. And I'm guessing, Bob, it's going to be more of like corrections from the padded practices. So I'm guessing slower pace today.
We'll come back. Jim Hunter's going to be joining us. Talk about the Orioles on a 5-game winning streak. Looking to make it 6 in a row and going for the sweep against the first place Blue Jays. Funhouse, Nolan McGraw, NFL lunch at 1. Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com. Talk about the season that will be. And in particular, look at these 2023 first round draft picks. Who's going to take another step? Our colleague, Baltimore Baseball Tonight. He's powered by Verizon. He's on the Window Nation guest hotline. He's our buddy and yours, Jim Hunter. Jim, what's happening?
How you doing there, partner?
I'm hanging in there. And, you know, I asked Nolan this jokingly in the opening of the show. 8 games under 500, 7 and out of the wild card. You're proceeding as planned, Mike Elias. I'm demanding that you still go on with your trade stuff here. But, I mean, could we see a little more interesting Orioles team in regards to, you know, making teams sweat than just 3 weeks ago when we thought they were toast, stick a fork in them, and all of that good stuff?
Well, they've gone from 13 below to 8 below, which is progress, obviously. You know, you mentioned they've won 5 in a row and 6 of 7. And in the 5-game winning streak, they've scored 53 runs. So the bats have certainly come on. That's an average of 10.6 runs per game, which you know, is so much better than their 4.4 runs per game on the season. But, you know, I don't know what the team's going to look like on Friday. You know, the team is off tomorrow. I guess they're traveling to Chicago today. And I guess unless some trades are consummated today, the players that are in the trade rumors will be on that flight to Chicago. And then they'll have to retreat if they're traded by the deadline. But it is interesting that the two of the players, O'Hearn, he's getting his stroke back, and Ramon Laureano, who's all over the place. I mean, you read him in rumors all over the place. He certainly is coming on and would be a perfect fit for a contender. So who knows what the team's going to look like on Friday when they play again after today. But I agree with you. I think Mike Elias should stay the course and not get infatuated. You know, there's still seven teams ahead of them, even though they're only seven games out of the wild card. And that's a lot of teams that you have to have lose on the same day. And that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, stay the course, 1,000 points of light, and all that good stuff. But just watching him, Jim, over the last week or so, how fun are they? I mean, with Kowser, Kowser scuffling, but you know, you got Kowser, you've got Holiday, Adley's back, and he's made an impact his two games. Gunner's starting to heat up, finally hit a home run. Just having these young core guys that are going to be around next year and beyond. How fun is it to watch them? Because it's been less than 10 times this group's been together on the field here in 2025.
Well, it has been a lot of fun, and you didn't mention Tyler O'Neill, found his stroke. You know, the guy we talked about on BBT last week that definitely isn't going to opt out. But in his last nine games, he's batting .355, four home runs, and 10 RBIs in those nine games. So he is healthy. He has found his stroke. And you're right, Bob. It is a lot of fun to watch because it seems to be, in definitely in this five-game winning streak, whatever they need to get, they get. You know, last night it was a 2-2 game going to the eighth, and they were able to get a base hit to drive in a run, and they took a 3-2 lead, and they won by a final of 3-2. It's hard to win one-run games, and that has certainly been the case on the year for the Birds. But, you know, Westberg is heating up. In July, he's batting .337. Charlie Morton, who won yesterday, in his last 11 games, is 7-1 with a 3.88 ERA. And that may have been his last start because contending teams, as you and I talked about on BBT last week, they like the track record of Charlie Morton in the postseason. So we'll have to see. And, you know, Brandon Young was great last night. I'm glad they gave him a chance to go through six innings. It seems to be prior to last night, 4 1/3, they were looking to get the hook out. But he gave them a chance to win. He did his job, and it was certainly his best major league start.
Eplin coming off a shaky outing a couple of nights ago, Jim. I mean, you're not getting a top five prospect for any of these guys, even though the Orioles did get a top tenner from Toronto for Dominguez. But what kind of a value for a contending team would Eplin offer in the final 2 months of the season?
Well, again, I think his track record. You know, you're right. He didn't pitch well on Monday in the first game against the Blue Jays. He didn't take the loss, but he didn't pitch deep into the game. But I think his track record will be attractive to a contending team because on a better team than the Orioles are, even though they're playing so well right now, he can fit in nicely with a contending team, with a better team than what he's pitching for or behind now. So I would think that he and Morton and even Sagano might be attractive to some teams. You know, and Ryan O'Hearn and Laureano are definitely, and you know, let's not forget about Cedric Mullins, even though he's certainly coming on, but he is certainly attractive to contending teams. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. But I think Eplin is still very much in the trade talk picture.
Talking Orioles with Jim Hunter. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw. Vinny's on his way out to one winning drive. Ravens 115 back at it with training camp. All right, under the assumption, Jim, that O'Hearn gets traded. Manzolino said yesterday that Mountcastle's going to be back for the Philly series. He's eligible to come off the IL on Sunday. How do you get, and with the anticipated maybe call-up of Bisaccia, how do you keep Mayo in a semi-regular position here?
Well, I think you play him at first base as much as you can, and he's playing so well defensively. And I again, and you and I have talked about this so much during the year, if you're going to bring a top prospect up, as they have, you got to play this guy. I realize he's not in the lineup today because Barrios is a very tough right-handed pitcher. So they have O'Hearn playing first base and Adley DHing today. But you're just going to have to figure it out. Either he DHs or he plays first base. And if Bisaccia comes up, maybe he catches two times a week, and Mountcastle DHs, and Bisaccia, I know he can play first base, and he's played first base quite a bit for AAA this year, but they're just going to have to figure it out. But if you're going to bring Bisaccia up, just like with Mayo, you have to play him. There's no doubt about it. You have to play him. So I would think it's going to be interesting for Manzolino to figure it out. But, you know, with three players in Mountcastle's tearing it up in AAA on his rehab. So hopefully he has a stroke back. But these guys, but if Bisaccia does get called up and Mayo's still on the team, which he should be, they got to find at bats for these guys.
What if Mountie goes crazy here in the final 2 months of the season, hits 10 bombs in August into September? Because this guy, they've been reading reports and talking to people, he could be, you know, just non-tendered in the offseason. Even if he goes crazy, Jim Hunter, in the final 2 months, are you still looking at him as a trade piece because of the Mayos and the Bisaccias and the youth that's coming through? Because Mountcastle still has another year on his deal here with the Orioles.
Well, I would think so. Again, you got to free up spots. And that's one thing Mike Elias has not done a very good job of, is freeing up spots to get these guys playing time. So I think they're going to have to do that. And if Mountcastle does have a very good final 2 months, maybe in the off season he does become a trade trip. So that way, first base is full time for Mayo and maybe even Bisaccia. Because if Adley's still on the team, which you know I expect he will be, he's going to catch at least 4 or 5 times a week, which means Bisaccia becomes the backup and he catches the other two. But again, if you're going to call that kid up, he's tearing it up in AAA this year, and he's what, still only 20 years old. So I would say that if Mountcastle has a good final 2 months, he will definitely be attractive in the offseason for a trade chip.
Jim Hunter, our colleague here on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, longtime voice of the Orioles, as you know. Jim, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the rest of your Woman Crush Wednesday, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right. Good to talk to you, Bob.
There he is, Jim Hunter, everyone. We'll come back, reset the program, give you the Orioles score right now. Blue Jays at the plate. Dean trying to get himself out of the first inning, and that's Man Bun. Dean Kramer, of course. Funhouse Trip, NFL Lunch, 1 o'clock. Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com. Talk some National Football League fun, and then your American League East report. If you want to get in, you can. It's 410-583-1057. Rutschman's at the plate, so the Orioles trying to get themselves an early advantage against Jose Barrios, who's been historically tough on the Orioles over the years. And Nolan McGraw, Bird's trying to make it 6 in a row. It is a winning streak, 5 straight. And they look, Toronto's banged up. Let's not, Springer got KO'd in game 1. Varsho's been on the IL for quite some time. Kirk is now on the IL. So they're not with their full complement of players. But if you're watching this series and you haven't really seen the Blue Jays, you're probably going, how in the hell are they in first place?
Yeah, no, I mean, this series has been extremely shocking to me, from the blowout to the narrow victories. I mean, last night was just should have been teed up right there. Easy win for the Jays. You know, look at the way the two bullpens were set up, and they even had it right there in the ninth. You know, you get the first two guys on, you bunt them over, and your big hitter there, Bo Bichette. I mean, what was he? He was 9-for-9 before that game in his last 9 at-bats. And then against pitchers like Corbin Martin and Brandon Young, looked like he'd never held a bat in his life. It was just stuff that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the last K that ended the game was
as ugly as I've never seen Bichette have a swing like that in my life.
Yeah,
that
looked like he was chopping wood, and it was a game ender. They had the go-ahead run ready to rock and roll. So the Orioles got bailed out, basically, by Bo Bichette on that at-bat. But, you know, as we talked about with Jim Hunter, it's fun to watch him now. Let's not get crazy with the playoff talk and, you know, 7 teams still ahead of them in the wild card. And they're going to have a different look in 48 hours. There are going to be some guys that are playing today and in that dugout today who are going to be gone. But I'm more concerned, as I said a couple weeks back, with the core group that's going to be here next year. And they're the ones that are making all of this, for the most part, happen. Cedric's been on fire, which is great. But the Mets, maybe, because they're interested in him, among other teams. So he could be traded. But just watching the core offense, the pitching's another story altogether. And what Young did yesterday, got sent back after the game. We're going to see him again. But to see these young bats and try to get that chemistry rolling yet again, they're going to put up some crooked numbers, I think, offensively, and they're going to have to, because I think the pitchers might be, you know, going to have a different look.
And I think it would go a long way for them heading into next year. Individually, when you think about players like Adley Rutschman, well, they just need it. You know, Tyler O'Neill, another guy that just, they need a stretch of success just for their own sake. You know, forget us nitpicking them and bashing them every chance we get.
That's what we do.
They need it for themselves at this point. Which is why, you know, Adley last night with the fly ball to the wall, you know, you look at his swing on that, screams pop up, easy can of corn. All of a sudden, this thing's almost a home run. But, you know, you're not complaining how you get there. You'll take it. And I think my biggest thing is that the way they're playing here in this Blue Jays series and the way they're playing in general, it doesn't seem like the deadline and the idea of losing teammates or core guys has really impacted them negatively. Now, to be fair, of the guys that they've traded so far, none of them are really long tenured guys that are, you know, went through the rebuild.
I guess Baker was part of the 22 team, so he had some tenure.
That's true. Yeah. But like Dominguez and Soto, I mean, they didn't even get a full year here,
right?
You know, so before they left. And Cedric will be the interesting one, and I guess O'Hearn for that matter too, because they're both kind of the two clubhouse leaders. And we're assuming both are going to go. What does that do for them this weekend against Chicago? How do they look against Philadelphia? I mean, if they come out lifeless there, and not just because of the level of competition, if they're just going back to playing like they were in April, where it's uninspired and lacking fundamentals, then maybe I'll change my tune. But I think it is a good sign that we're not hearing them talk about it either. Like, oh man, it sucks that we're losing our friends and everything. Because that was the case with Hayes. Remember last year, and it seemed like it kind of rattled the clubhouse a little bit, even when the team was playing pretty well. You know, there was no reason for them to be down on themselves, but they lost one of their longest tenured teammates, and maybe it shook them up a little bit. So hopefully that kind of stuff is behind them, and they understand this is just part of the game.
And if the ultimate shakeup happened to them in May when they fired Brandon Hyde, and they were stunned, and I vividly remember, because Elias didn't talk to the media. Hyde certainly wasn't doing any parting shots. The players were the first ones to address the media, and Adley Rutschman looked like he was about to start crying because of what happened. So there was the big, like, stunning turn of events, because when a manager gets fired, a guy that's been part of the rebuild going back to 2019, I mean, Hyde's got a couple of terrible seasons on the back of his baseball card or whatever, his baseball reference page. Like, oh my God, we got this dude fired who's had our back all along. There was the stunner, and they seemed to be playing, and they were sleepwalking through the first couple of games post Brandon Hyde there. So trades of Hayes, or excuse me, Mullins and O'Hearn's probably going to stink for them, because they've come up through this, a lot of them together. But, you know, I think the bigger stunner was their manager getting whacked not even halfway through the season.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that could, in the long run, end up being not really a turning point, but more so like a maturity growing moment. You know, I'm not one of these people that's, super down on this team or calling them immature by any means, but I think in some cases their youth has worked against them. Not that it's an extreme detriment, as it looks, Ahearn just went yard.
Yes,
so
he
there
did.
You go. He's sending himself off right. There you go. Get on the phone, Elias. No, but they look, for a guy like Adley, too, plays the game the right way, I can't say a bad thing about him. But if there was something that I'd like to see more out of him, it's leadership. So you're going to lose prospective leaders here in Ahearn and Mullins. Somebody's got to step up.
By all accounts, he's a quiet leader in that clubhouse. And when he walked in a couple of days ago, it was like Christmas in July, almost literally. What I want to see from Adley is pre-All-Star break 2024 production.
Well, that's first and foremost.
I want to see from Adley Rutschman, who does have a ribby. It's 3-0 Orioles. Ryan Ahearn, as Nolan said, just hit a two-run jack. Jose Berríos, so two outs. Bottom of the first, Orioles up 3-0 over the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll talk about that and more in the 1 o'clock hour. But when we come back, we got some NFL lunch. We're going to hear from John Harbaugh. Going to hear from Lamar Jackson, who was on NFL Network. Going to talk more NFL with Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com. The draft class of 23, the quarterbacks in particular, what is he like? What's he concerned with? Let's just say it's a big year for Anthony Richardson and maybe for Bryce Young as well. And is C.J. Stroud going to take? Everybody had him as a MVP guy from last year. Didn't happen. They made the playoffs again. But could C.J. Stroud, because he's kind of been lost in the Jaden Daniels stuff. Because he's become the new thing. What about C.J. Stroud? We forgot how good this guy's really been.